Welcome to the Light of Day podcast for Saturday, November 12th, 2011. I've decided to pursue a podcast for the Light of Day website in lieu of a number of newsworthy stories that I find to be very important to cover at this point in time. The top of my list is the first ever nationwide test by FEMA of the emergency alert system, which failed in numerous locations around the country 3 days ago. National problems. The test was not without flaws. Most states got the alert at the scheduled time, but others did not. After all, the purpose of the test is to find out how well the system would work in an actual emergency. Some of the flubbed alerts reported to the Media Decoder blog were: DirecTV subscribers said their TV sets played the Lady Gaga song Paparazzi when the test was underway. And some Time Warner cable subscribers in New York said the test never even appeared on the screen. Some Comcast subscribers in Northern Virginia said their TV sets were switched over to QVC before the alert was shown. I can't remember what QVC stands for. Then there was a viewer in Minneapolis who said he saw the message about 3 minutes late. A viewer in Chattanooga, Tennessee said she saw it about 10 minutes late. In Greensboro, North Carolina, a local reporter saw the alert on all the cable news channels, but none of the local... I can't really make that out, but anyway. In Los Angeles, some cable's customers said the alert lasted almost half an hour late. Now, satellite distributors like DirecTV and Dish Network, along with cable distributors like Comcast, participated, along with the broadcast stations. Internet connections were not included in the test, which led some to question how comprehensive the alert system could be. I got an update now on the Canary Island situation from yesterday. There was a magnitude 4.6 earthquake that happened in the El Golfo Bay just as soon as yesterday was starting. The depth was 21 kilometers, still quite deep. We don't really have to worry too much about these quakes until they're less than 5 miles deep. This is one of the strongest earthquakes on El Hierro so far. This quake was also felt on the islands of La Palma and Tenerife. And that's kind of worrisome when folks on the island of La Palma start feeling quakes from El Hierro. IGN scientists have confirmed that an eruption in the El Golfo area is possible and that an eruption on the coast itself cannot be excluded. But to make this happen, more powerful earthquakes are needed to allow the magma to the surface. Now, keep in mind where this strong 4.6 quake happened. It's called the El Golfo Bay, which is on the north side of the El Hierro Island where most of the quakes have been happening, and just directly south of La Palma. Now, I got this article, too. It's titled, New Canary Island Thrusts Up from the Ocean Floor. Atlantis Rising. Remember, as land masses arise, the equal and opposite reaction is land masses go down, and I'll be covering that here shortly. This is off the Mail Online out of the United Kingdom, dated November 10th. Rising from beneath the waves, a new Canary Island emerges as underwater volcano hits the surface. Now, just recently, it was only this new island that's forming off the Canaries was only like 400 feet from protruding from the ocean surface. Now it's only 230 feet away from the ocean surface, so it is rising. Nearby town is evacuated and ships banned from traveling to the area as strong smell of sulfur fills the air. And explosive plumes and jets have been spotted coming from the volcano for the last month now. A brand new Canary Island is emerging from the sea as an underwater volcano bubbles to the surface. The reason I'm bringing this up, folks, is because remember what my friend John DiNardo had learned from one of his friends, that what was happening out in the Gulf of Mexico was they eventually expected land masses to arise. And that may have happened. Maybe that's why there was such an extreme mainstream news blackout in that area for a while. And I believe the blackout still persists to this day. Magma off the Canary Island of El Hierro has been spewing 60 feet, at least 60 feet high, as the sea boils with a smell of sulfur. As it grows and gets closer to the surface, more and more debris, such as stones, start to shoot out of the volcano, which until now has only shown its explosive power below the surface. It's now just 230 feet from the surface, and islanders are already trying to come up with a name for the new island. It is quite close to El Hierro, and if it continues to erupt, it could eventually meet up with the mainland there. In other words, it would actually start to connect with the island of El Hierro itself. I mean, they're taking this so seriously that Ryanair, famed for flying to out-of-town airports, plans on opening up a route to the newborn island. Homes have been evacuated and roads have been closed on the southernmost Canary Island following a government-issued warning about a possible volcanic eruption, while shipping has been banned in the area. The southern tip of El Hierro was shaken by a 4.3 quake late on Saturday as the underwater volcano just off the coast started spewing. The island, which has 500 volcanic cones, has already experienced more than, well, up to this point, it's actually around 11,000 tremors in the past 4 months. Renewed fears of an eruption came as vast quantities of magma, which is the molten rock from just under the Earth's crust, began bubbling into the sea off the port of La Restinga. And I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's how I pronounce it. Witnesses said that explosive plumes and jets could be seen on the ocean surface from the underwater volcano, which began erupting last month. Some of the material is being ejected as high as 60 feet into the air. The regional government of the Spanish Canary Island issued a yellow volcanic eruption alert, which is the second on a four-level scale. La Restinga's 600 residents were evacuated last week after the volcanic activity began. Now, new evacuations have been called for people living along the southern end of the island. Authorities have also shut down access to La Restinga. Ships have been ordered away from waters around the port, and aircraft have been banned from flying over the island's southern tip. The regional government of the Canary Islands says scientists have detected airborne volcanic fragments called pyroclasts rising from the sea off La Restinga. The government said it awaited scientific reports on the danger posed by pyroclasts, but a research vessel that was collecting samples there has been ordered to stop. Fears of an eruption have been going on since the end of July, when El Hierro experienced the first of what has become more than 10,000 tremors, collectively known as an earthquake swarm. Residents were evacuated from some areas at the end of September, when volcanic activity increased to more than 150 tremors in a 24-hour period. The army was put on standby for a mass evacuation. Volcanic expert Juan Carlos Carracedo said at the time, quote, "There is a ball of magma rising to the surface, producing a series of ruptures which generate seismic activity." He went on to say, "We don't know if that ball of magma will break through the crust and cause an eruption." But he warned, an eruption was possible in days, weeks, or months. The last eruption on El Hierro was in 1793 and lasted for a month, while the last one in the Canary Islands as a whole took place on the island of La Palma back in 1971. And that was the year I was born, folks. Now, the Canary Islands are all volcanic in origin, but are not unique in this respect. The Hawaiian Islands are also volcanoes that built up over time and breached the surface. In hundreds of thousands of years, it'll get a new island called Lo'ihai, I guess that's how you say it, Lo'ihai, which is slowly forming off the southeast coast of Hawaii. Right now, it's around 3,000 feet beneath the ocean surface, but it's already been causing trouble, producing frequent earthquakes. You may be surprised, folks, to learn that 75% of all the lava that erupts every year comes from undersea volcanoes. The surrounding water immediately cools it, and a crust forms known as pillow lava. There are over 5,000 known submarine volcanoes, but some are extremely difficult to find, even with today's technology. The time right now, folks, is 11:13 a.m. Mountain Time. Here on Saturday, I'm just going to the earthquake-report.com website, which has pretty much the most up-to-date information on the Canary Islands. It shows that they're under red alert right now. Continuing strong harmonic tremor bursts occurring. Now, there are two live webcams that have been set up so people can monitor the activity going on there. So if you folks want to go to earthquake-report.com, you can check on live streams of emanating from those two webcams there. Just checking out updates here from today. Apparently a new faint activity area is forming out there in the Las Calmas Sea in front of La Restinga. Up until 9:07 a.m. local time in the Canaries today, they only had 13 volcanic earthquakes since midnight, but none of them have been stronger than a 3.0. But the harmonic tremor is still present with regular powerful bursts. Now, the lack of powerful earthquakes and the continuing strong harmonic tremor are indicating that a new vent might have been opened at a deeper location, not showing any jacuzzi or serious turbulence. Now, the first eruption period had similarities with the present situation. Recent satellite images would certainly reveal this kind of eruption. Now, the strength of the earthquakes has calmed down a little bit, but we expect to see a new barbujas or jacuzzi soon as the harmonic tremor graph shows some strong bursts again. So you guys can go to earthquake-report.com for most current updates on the situation over there. Now keep in mind, folks, what is actually the culprit behind these earth changes is a dwarf star is being inexorably pulled towards the sun by the sun's enormous gravitational force field. As this baby star is reeled in by that great solar fisherman, this baby star will cruise above the northern hemispheres of our inner planets, and its gravitational and magnetic forces acting at a distance will increasingly molest our Earth as well as Mars, Venus, and Mercury while electrically exciting the sun to emit scorching solar blasts. And that's what the elites are very concerned about, and that's, I believe, the primary reason they activated the first ever nationwide test of the emergency alert system on Wednesday. Speaking of the sun, folks, I'm going to spaceweather.com, which I routinely do on a daily basis, and I'm checking out. We just had a CME impact today. As predicted, a coronal mass ejection hit the Earth's magnetic field at approximately 0600 UT. Universal time, which would have been around midnight here in our time zone. The impact caused ground currents in Norway and a brief flurry of auroras around the Arctic Circle, but otherwise had little effect. No big geomagnetic storms are in the offing. Now, there is also a grand filament of magnetism more than 700,000 kilometers long, which is curling around the sun's northeastern limb. Now, the filament is weighted down by the solar plasma. If it erupts, as such filaments are prone to do, it could fall to the stellar surface below, setting off an explosion called a hydra flare. I think it's supposed to be hydra flare, but they spelled it wrong. Or, then again, it might fly upward, hurling fragments of itself into space. Amateur astronomers with solar telescopes are encouraged to monitor the region for developments. Now, here they are calling on the public to help them monitor what's going on. Now, I recall last year that NASA was recruiting the public to help them find meteorites, and then I also heard from John DiNardo that last year they were recruiting the public to help them pinpoint where earthquakes are occurring at. So here the establishment is calling upon the public to help them figure out or monitor what's going on. I think that's because the elites have become extremely worried over these earth changes that are occurring. Looking at the sun here on space weather, we got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 sunspots. Total sunspot number is 127. What NOAA referred to as a benevolent monster of a sunspot group, which is AR-1339. It's in a state of decay, which is accelerating, but it still poses a threat for M-class solar flares. We'll be covering that here shortly about sunspot 1339, which the elites are, I believe, extremely concerned about. There's no large coronal holes on the Earth side of the sun, which is good news. looking at recent and upcoming near-Earth asteroid encounters. They haven't shown any new ones there lately. But then again, they're not allowed to report on incoming space rocks anymore, so they might not be fully informing the public about near-Earth asteroids anymore because of that that new edict or whatever that was put out 2 years ago. Solar wind is 438 kilometers a second. That's okay. That's in the green. So that's a little report from spaceweather.com. Now, I get the daily reports of the UV index for Tucson, Arizona. It usually shows like a 4 or 5 recently. But according to Ann Morrison, who's a friend of talk show host John Moore, is that number may actually be like 3, 4, or 5 points higher than what they're telling us because I don't think they're factoring in the depletion of the ozone layer. Just within the last few weeks here, they discovered a big hole in the ozone layer over the northern Arctic and over the Midwest, so a lot of that UV light could be getting in here, and they're not factoring that in. So I believe the solar scorching has started already. It's just a matter of paying attention as to what's going on here. I've seen this report on weather.com, a 90-foot wave out in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Portugal. Now, a 90-foot wave, folks, from what I understand, a tsunami only goes up to maybe like 20 or 30 feet high. So as the Earth changes persist, we'll continually see irregularities like this out on the ocean, which they refer to as rogue waves. And shows a video on weather.com of a surfer riding out this 90-foot wave. You go to GCNlive.com, Barb Adams, she's a talk show host on there. She does a show on Saturday night. She has an excellent article titled Climate Change and Superstorms. That's worth reading. Okay, now in regard to flooding going on around the world, I want to read something that I get from regularly from somebody on my... I'm a recipient of their email list. Living in the flood zone, uncertainty, sorting out the truth from the lies the establishment keeps spouting, and disease. Lots of disease in large cities, everything is compounded, raw sewage is in the water, electrocution from live wires underwater is very real. The smell is everywhere, waterborne disease proliferates. Yet the citizens stay as this was their life, and their governments are telling them that life will go back to normal. In Bangkok, so aptly pointed out by a well-maintained pole shift Ning blog, sinking is so rapid that a map showing the flooded districts between November 3rd and the next day, November 4th, shows a progression for a single day. The city of 12 million and its coastline visibly going under. If this were merely water from the interior, then why are parts of the coastline sinking? The flooded coastline is not even connected to the interior floods. Bangkok is sinking. About 20% of the capital in Bangkok is now submerged in floodwater contaminated by rubbish, dead animals, and industrial waste, raising fears about outbreaks of disease in the densely populated metropolis of 12 million people. While the center of the capital, Bangkok, remains dry, residential areas in its outskirts and to the north have been submerged in water up to people's waists or even deeper as a runoff creeps south from the central plains. In Vietnam, the lands are destined to sink to the 40-foot level, as is Bangkok, and are steadily sinking. Ulcers, mold, contaminated drinking water, and a foul smell everywhere. That's living in the flood zone in Vietnam. Once again, those areas destined to sink are those struggling with flooding. South Vietnam is sinking. Cambodia has turned into an inland lake. The people in despair without rescue. In Vietnam, local people said that in 2 days, the area has suffered 3 waves of unusually high tides. Now we go over to Cambodia. More than 1 million Cambodians struggling against the floods. According to UN estimates, floods have affected 3/4 of land in Cambodia and about 1.2 million of the country's 15 million people. Floodplains turned into vast lakes. Buffaloes, cows, pigs, chickens were herded together on the crowded strip, which is dirty. The people of Cambodia are grappling with very difficult life and the majority in a state of despair. Is it a coincidence that only these parts of Asia are having what is termed high tides or alternatively have problems with sinking due to pulling drinking water out of the ground? Why only these regions on the Sunda Plate where the sinking is picking up speed? This is what the establishment would have you believe. Then there's a link here. Asia pays watery price for overdevelopment. Similar subsidence and seawater encroachment is occurring in Jakarta, Ho Chi Minh City, and Manila, where a typhoon last month triggered the worst flooding in the Philippine capital for decades. The news reported in March of this year that 40% of North Jakarta was below sea level. This has now moved by the end of October to be 70% of North Jakarta below sea level. Living in the flood zone there is reported to be producing diarrhea, rashes, and coughs. West Sumatra is on the sinking edge where the Sunda Plate dips down and under the curve holding Sumatra and Java. Suddenly, even admittedly without much rain, Sumatra is again sinking. The permanent loss of elevation brings immense devastation to those whose homes and farms and roads are inundated, homes and bridges swept away, education of children disrupted, and crops ruined, so starvation is inevitable. Neighbors would help neighbors, but when all are affected, all suffer and no help arrives. Indonesia sinking. Indeed, the floods that occurred during the transition season from dry to wet. Today still not high rainfall intensity. Rainfall is still quite normal. Coast of West Sumatra flood victims swallow. This goes on about all the places that are flooding. Meanwhile, the cities of Southeast Asia will be soggy, water in the basements, water undermining the foundation so the buildings begin to sag and lean. Certainly, rotten mold will be rising, as well as waterborne illnesses and parasites and snakes, plagues, all of it. Those trying to continue life as before will finally be forced to leave these cities or move to higher ground nearby. Those governments trying to hold the line on the cover-up over the presence of Planet X will continue to talk in terms that had meaning in the old days. More dikes, more sandbags, cleaning the drains or dredging the rivers, more pumps, and that it will all drain in time. And this drama of clinging to the old while refusing to face the new will continue elsewhere around the globe. Now, there is this military man that was recently arrested up here in Alaska. Why would the FBI and the Army Counterintelligence Unit pounce on a military policeman from Owensboro, Kentucky, accusing him of espionage when he didn't even have access to classified information? The announcement of the arrest was reported on Fox, CNN, MSNBC, and various other military and major media outlets. Where the arrest can be confirmed, the reason for the arrest cannot, but is rumored to be related to troop movements and their relationship to the timing of the end of the world. Certainly, it is no secret that our email and phone calls are monitored and keywords and phrases trigger further investigation. If troop movements would be a clue to what the establishment knows about the pending pole shift, then such discussions from enlisted folks might be forbidden. Specialist William Millay of Owensboro, Kentucky, is now acutely aware of this, presumably. Now, this guy just had a standard security clearance. He did not possess or have access to sensitive classified material. He allegedly offered to sell classified information to an undercover police officer, according to an MSNBC report. What would troop movements reveal, folks? Well, the U.S. military has long since determined their action plan as the earth changes increase. They would bring the troops home almost in stealth mode without fanfare, leaving a skeleton crew on bases overseas. The troops would be needed at home, and sending them home to be with their families when the time came would prevent mischief. Now, the war games that were discussed during the NATO exercises included disasters equivalent to those we have predicted for the upcoming pole shift, immense devastation sparing none. In the event that such a scenario ensues, increasing volcanic eruption, quake-torn roads and crumbling cities, mass populations homeless and roving the countryside, how should treaties installing the U.S. military in bases around the world be viewed? In the event of such earth changes, troops would be brought home under stealth and with little fanfare to the respective homelands, leaving at most a skeleton crew at the bases. Now, what would the attitude of the soldier be if starvation were rampant, news of this coming from home? The military knows this, discusses this endlessly. They have great history to examine. Martial law in the U.S. is not expected. We anticipate, rather than a martial law setup, that troops will be sent home just ahead of the pole shift to be with their families. In this way, they will be disbanded, less of a threat, and more likely to assist their families than run as gangs. That said, what is the current status of troop movement, stealth or not? The troops are coming home from the wars by the end of this year for Iraq and by the middle of next year for Afghanistan. Now we're going to go into the emergency alert system coincidence. Was it the relationship to a passing asteroid scheduled to zip between the Earth and the Moon 3 days ago and a simultaneous emergency alert system test? This is the first time, folks, since 1976 that an object of this size has passed this closely to the Earth. The orbit and position of the asteroid, which was about 1,312 feet in diameter, is well known. This is not a coincidence, folks, and shows how nervous the U.S. government is about the public getting wise to the near presence and passage, impending passage of Planet X. The Obama administration has given many clues that it is getting ready for disasters within the U.S. territories. FEMA has been intensely busy. Now, FEMA was developing a plan to house and feed millions of homeless, and by August of this year, Executive Order 13575 was issued, documenting the plan, which I think is the White House establishment of a rural council. In May of this year, the plan system, whereby the Obama administration could text directly to mobile phone holders, was implemented. How is yet another emergency alert system test any different? It is bigger and more comprehensive, as is appropriate for a country preparing for the disasters that have been described. Is there any relationship between the date of the EAS test and the passage of an asteroid passing between the Earth and the Moon? Both happened on Wednesday, November 9th. The asteroid, identified as asteroid 2005 YU-55, long known to the folks at NASA, is not a surprise, and its pending passage allowed the date of the emergency alert system test to coincide. The passage is being used in part as an excuse for the need for such a nationwide system, a nationwide test. Since both will be in the news on the same day, the public is expected to make the connection. In this way, it is hoped, the connection to the rising increase in earthquakes and peculiar signs in the skies will not be made. So that's the end of that email newsletter that I routinely get. I also wanted to mention that because I just covered the emergency alert system test, that on the movie Knowing, if you go to the movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage, you scroll 1 hour, 31 minutes, and 35 seconds into the movie, it for about maybe 2 or 3 seconds, it shows the emergency broadcast test on a TV set right before the Earth gets scorched by the sun. So here is another prime example of the people in the know trying to get it out through the movie industry that they know what's coming, folks. Now, like I stated earlier in the podcast, what I believe was the dire threats to the elites was for activating the first ever nationwide test of the EAS was the severe threat from a sunspot group on the sun, also known as AR-1339. Okay, this is posted on the Intel Hub website. Dated November 8th, NOAA warns of monster solar storm region facing the Earth for the next 2 weeks. So This would go up until, I believe, the 23rd of November. This region on the sun is fully capable of producing X-class flares. Now, last Thursday, the sun produced an X1.9 rated solar flare that narrowly missed the Earth. Although it wasn't aimed directly at us, about 45 minutes after leaving the sun, it was still powerful enough to disrupt radio communications. Now, that same area responsible for producing the X-class flare may pose a direct threat to Earth. NOAA's Space Weather Prediction Center up in Colorado says that the region on the sun known as AR-1339 and affectionately called the Benevolent Monster will set its sights on Earth over the next 2 weeks. It will move into a position that poses the largest risk to our planet around November 9th. That was the same day they had the emergency alert system test, folks. And this sunspot group will remain on a direct line of sight with Earth for the following 2 weeks as it rotates. Scientists at the Federal Space Weather Prediction Center say that this area is the most active part of the sun in 6 years. It has dozens of sunspots, including one, folks, that is the size of 17 Earths. Quote, it's still growing. The size is what blows me away, end quote. That was quoted by somebody. It doesn't say who, though. Thursday's flare wasn't aimed at Earth. However, this active region is now slowly turning towards Earth, and scientists say it will be directly facing Earth in about 5 days. I don't know what the truth is here, folks, but I've been monitoring that sunspot on the sun on spaceweather.com, and it shows it's just about to rotate out of view right now. What I think's going on is back at the end of October, we had a flare or a CME that the officials were stating was only going to affect Mars, but we caught them lying because we ended up getting hit from. Our Earth was sideswiped from that CME. Maybe this is what they're concerned about. This sunspot is so humongous that we could still get sideswiped from a CME cloud. Now that storm region will only affect Earth if it shoots off flares and they hit our planet, which doesn't always happen with stormy areas, said Prediction Center space scientist Joe Cunchies. So he's the guy that said it's still growing. The size is what blows him away. The region will be facing Earth for about 2 weeks as it rotates, he said. Solar flares send out bursts of electromagnetic energy that can occasionally disrupt communications and electrical systems. We'll be facing this monster starting sometime on the evening of November 8th into the 9th, which has already passed. Considering that it has just recently ejected an X-class flare towards Earth and another towards Venus, we should consider the region to be active and fully capable of affecting our planet. Now, while NOAA's warnings fall short of any imminent end-of-the-world-as-we-know-it event, the risk over the next 2 weeks of a Carrington-like event are higher now than at any time in the last decade. Keep in mind, folks, that there's a hole that was detected in the Earth's magnetic field, which is 10 times the size of our own Earth. So our shields are down, and we're extremely vulnerable to a 1859 Carrington-type event. And that Carrington event was caused by a solar flare, which reportedly knocked out telegraph operations around the world. It is believed that such an event, were it to occur today, could potentially take down the U.S. power grid for months or years and paralyze the entire planet. It could paralyze the economy of the planet because in 1859 we had a gigantic solar storm which knocked out telegraph wires back then, 150 years ago. If that happened today, it would knock out almost all our satellites, knock out power stations. There would be food riots across the country because refrigeration would stop, airplanes would probably crash without radar. And isn't that something? Because if you go to the movie Knowing, it shows an airplane falling out of the sky before the solar scorching happens. So there's another hint, folks. My friend John DiNardo told me that he's seen a video on the Weather Channel about what the FEMA administrator, Craig Fugate, had to say. I guess it aired on the Weather Channel on Tuesday, which would have been November 8th. I haven't come across it yet, but the Weather Channel may have actually been airing an old clip of something he had stated, but this is what the FEMA administrator has said in the past anyway. He said that several scenarios short of nuclear war would persuade a president to activate the emergency alert system circuit. They include a space weather event. If a solar flare were detected that could significantly disrupt wireless communications across the country, the president might want to give people notice. Mr. Fugate said that Americans often underestimate how fragile the communication system is. He's quoted as saying, it's something we were reminded of in the earthquake, whatever earthquake that is. And if you've ever been to a football game and tried to make a call after a big play in the fourth quarter, you know it. I guess Craig Fugate also attended a National Press Club get-together June 8th of last year. There were 200-plus scientists, physicists, meteorologists, and other very technical specialists that assembled at this thing called the Space Weather Enterprise Forum. Yeah, I'm reading here. The FEMA administrator, Craig Fugate, was there, and recognizing that he was a fish out of water in a room full of technically minded scientists and astronomers, the notable emergency manager addressed the crowd as one of the believers in the space weather threat. He explained that as the person who leads America's largest emergency management network, the country is looking to him and FEMA colleagues to take action on a range of threats such as floods, hurricanes, earthquakes, etc. When he mentioned the threat of a geomagnetic storm or other space weather disturbance, he explained that nearly no one, from the general public to other emergency managers to the people he interacts with at the White House, has a clue on what he is talking about. He called upon the Space Weather Forum attendees to get him better data, better forecasts, and increased warnings so that he, along with others in the room, could better educate policymakers and the general public. Without it, he could not adequately prepare the public. Fugate also drove home the point through anecdotal examples that when a geomagnetic or solar storm event occurs, it will not just impact one small geographic area like a flood, fire, or tornado. Impacts with such a storm would be hemispheric in size and would have tremendous disruptions to infrastructures, for example, power, energy, communications, etc. In chronicling the history of these events and their previous occurrences, Mr. Fugate stated bluntly that we as a nation are not ready to deal with these storms. He further explained that while the country had endured previous large geomagnetic storms, our country and world today are so absolutely dependent upon a range of vulnerable technologies, for example, satellite transmissions, GPS, cell phones, etc., to run everything, that when the big one hits us, we're going to be in really bad shape. In that situation, the idea of who is in charge of what becomes very important, and no one had a good idea of those responsibilities at the present time. So, there was also an event up in Boulder before this event last year. It was like a tabletop exercise for solar storms. So, they've been worried about this for quite a while. And me, John DiNardo, and talk show host John Moore believe that the primary reason the elites are going underground is because of the solar scorching that is inevitably going to occur. You know, we need to pay attention when officials like the FEMA administrator talk about these things.